Sup, thrill seekers. I'm Dev.
And I'm Connor, and you're listening to Mass Hysteria.
And we're back. Wow, we didn't even plan that.
That was beautiful.
Some things never change. Welcome or welcome back to the first episode of 2022 of Mass Hysteria. So you may be wondering what happened to Mass Hysteria.
And some of you may think that we owe you an apology.
And we decided to start 2022 with no apologies.
No apologies. So you're not getting one. Keep waiting, sister.
Connor's had to enter 2010. She has a new level of sass. I know. Unbelievable that you could go even higher. So we actually had to take some time off because we got married.
Yes.
It was a big thing. We had a destination wedding. It was a
beautiful ceremony.
Our destination was hell.
it was really warm.
Over, we'll get married.
It was really warm.
Is there a possibility we'll enter into a civil union one day? Highly likely.
Highly likely.
We did not actually take off time to get married, but...
We just needed a mental health break, you know?
And... We started working on a top secret project.
Yes.
With one of our top secret friends.
Yes.
And we will be kind of sharing more details with you all as we go along. Little teasers of what's to come, but...
It's good.
Soft launch.
It's exciting.
In like 1 to 2 months. So get excited. It'll be awesome. We've put a lot of work into it. I think one of the hardest things with... Like, making a series about any type of crime or mystery is, like, it's very easy to Google the answer. And this project we're working on is very thought-provoking because there's a lot of elements at play. So, get excited. It's going to be awesome. And one other thing. So, we're doing all our housekeeping. Our house has been a little dirty.
We have some housekeeping. Sorry, guys.
We got a suggestion, like... Yes, if you don't find our humor enjoyable, one, how's it feel to have bad taste? But two,
you might want to check yourself for COVID because I have heard having no taste is a symptom. Oh, so
too soon. Also, Connor did not just pass gas; he's sitting on one of my chairs
on the leather chair.
I warned him it would squeak.
Anyway, she did. She was right.
But if you do find us,
I regret nothing.
Annoying. One, we understand. No need to elaborate. But two. From here forward, I'm going to leave a little timestamp on the episode that'll say when we actually talk about whatever.
So if you want to skip this part, no hard feelings, go for it.
No hard feelings. Just know that you won't be on our Christmas list. It's fine. but in all seriousness, we like to add a little bit of lighthearted stuff in the beginning because obviously we take
the
subject matter. Yeah, a lot of the subject matter is really heavy that we get into and we... kind of, you know, we feel like we're checking in with friends each week, so we want to have a fun intro, but then if that's not your cup of tea or if it's not something you want to listen to, we will give you the timestamp so you can skip ahead.
Perfect.
I think that's all we have. So, like I said, check back in each week because we are back on our regular schedule and we will be giving you updates about what's to come. So I hope you didn't miss this monotone too much because I will be leading the case today. Connor does not know what this is about. We're like playing around with the format of our show, so bear with us. But this one, I feel like a lot of the episodes we do don't always have a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And this one does not have a happy ending, but there is justice.
There's resolution.
So it's very... interesting. Right. It just happened.
You like that.
Okay. So, on a Sunday morning in 1972, Stephen Bennett was on his way to Hoombrook in New Hampshire. And he was going there because he was going to fish for the day. I know most people listening have probably been to a New England town or are familiar with the area, but New Hampshire, Mass, Vermont, like, it's very easy to cross state lines. So
this is Newton, you said?
New Hampshire.
Yeah, Newton's, like, right on the border of, exactly. like
Haverhill.
And Amesbury and all that. So it's very close to Massachusetts.
Very close. So he was going up there, going to spend a quiet Sunday morning. It was late. close to lunchtime when he was going to start fishing. And he, as he got closer to the little pond area, brook, he noticed something in the water. He's like, that's weird. It looks like a mannequin bobbing. It's never a mannequin.
It's never a mannequin.
Never a mannequin. But he was startled when he got closer because he realized it was a naked woman lying face down in the water. Okay. The victim was later identified as Arlene Clevesy. She's 48 years old. She was lying face down, like I said, about 9 feet from the water's edge. Her upper torso was totally underwater, and her lower body was still kind of bobbing out of water. And it was recent, so she wasn't, like, fully, like, honest. I know it's kind of, like,
did they start to
gruesome, yeah, but, like, not waterlogged and all
bloated.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Trooper William Thompson arrived, and he noticed that there was a dirt path, and it looked like it was made from someone, like, dragging the body.
Okay. Yeah.
And there are also two large footprints. So this is the 70s, right? So, like, DNA is not a thing yet. So these
key pieces really of evidence important. Are really important. Yeah.
There were also some tire tracks around, but they were starting to kind of disappear because there was an incoming storm.
We love that.
And a corset type of item, like kind of girdle-like. Okay. Shapewear, I don't know what else mm-hmm. to describe it.
Teddy. Sorry.
Was located close to the scene, like it was caught on a bush, but that was all that was around there.
Weird.
And then the next day, a pink dress was found less than a mile from the crime scene, like hanging on a tree. Mm-hmm. And pantyhose were on the ground.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah, so these like disheveled items of clothing, woman's body, that's all they have. They have the tire tracks, but those are
footprints
going away, kind of fading because of the weather coming in, and they have like photos of the photo of the footprints. And so the family, Arlene's family, confirmed that the clothes were her, which is how they could know that like they should be viewing the body to actually confirm. And the autopsy said that she had suffered multiple blunt injuries to her head and to her neck so badly that she had like bleeding between her brain and like her
the brain stem.
Yeah. So she had actually died from inhaling water and branches.
Oh, it's awful.
So awful. So her husband, so she was married, and her sisters had
how old was she again?
48.
Okay.
And her sisters lived in the area too, and they all came in to identify her body. So some of her jewelry was missing. She had black glasses. Those were gone. She had a gold watch. That was gone. Her engagement ring. Her shoes. She had actually married Harold later in life, 47. They'd been married for less than a year.
Oh, my God.
And so they had decided to go to the Hotel Whittier, which was close by in Haverhill, to get some drinks to celebrate Arlene's birthday. And so they went. They had couple of rounds of drinks, and Harold was starting to get tired. I think he had like work the next day, so I think Arlene had made some friends in the hotel, and he's like, I'm gonna go back. And Arlene wanted to still stay out, it's her birthday. And when she was not home the next day, he started calling around. So the following day, there was an alert published about an unidentified missing woman, like in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And the police needed to kind of figure out who last would have seen Arlene.
Right.
And so when they pulled in Harold, he's like, I didn't see her after that this night at the hotel.
Yeah.
I've been spending my time calling around trying to find out where she was. So a man named Forrest Hicks said that he arrived at the Eagles Club, which was the last place that he had seen her, which is where she went after she left the hotel. And he saw a man named Albert Moore, like, socializing with her. And they were being, like, kind of flirty, which he thought was a little odd because he heard from his friends that Arlene was married. And when the clubs shut down, they wanted to continue to party and, like, have fun. So this small group of people, like, were standing outside the club, kind of, you know, when you're, like, trying to figure out who's going to ride with who and where they're going to go.
Yeah.
And he overheard Albert say, I'm going to screw up Arlene's honeymoon, okay? And so Albert, like, immediately gives off, like, sleazy vibes, based on the comments that people shared that he said. So he's like very flirty. He's touching her. He's like reaching on her dress. Yeah. Creepy. Very creepy and inappropriate. And he got out of his truck and offered to give Arlene a ride home. So he's like, you can just come with me.
What a gentleman.
What a gentleman. And he, before he could actually drive off, he got really heated because she was talking to some men that appeared to be like Puerto Rican, he thought, and he was racist. So he was saying slurs at them.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I don't think he could be any more of a red flag, horrible person. But one of the men that he was like shouting these remarks at was, I guess, kind of fighting with Forrest too. So Albert decided to, you guessed it, pull out a gun.
Oh, great.
So this upstanding citizen was like, oh, I'll drive you home still. I'll drive you home. And Arlene's like, just let it go. Like, let's just drive, whatever.
I would have been like, I'm going to get out now. Thank you, bye. But she obviously had a lot to drink at this point, it seems like.
And she spent the whole night with him. So I'm sure she thought, like, he has a bit of a temper or he's...
Right, right.
I don't associate with a racist, but, you know, she's probably just like, he's a little bit riled up, whatever. I don't know. I'm not excusing his behavior, but we also would never victim blame someone here because she just wanted to ride home and that's what she thought she was getting. But when the two drove off, that was the last time anyone saw them. So there were multiple accounts of this like tan truck being seen leaving the Eagles club, and that was later identified as his truck. Okay, so who was Albert? Obviously, we've shared some lovely details about him. He was in the middle of a divorce. His wife didn't see him from Saturday morning, which was when he would go to work. Saturday night was when they were at the Eagles club, until Sunday afternoon. So that's like, what, 36 hours?
Yeah.
You've done math more recently than I have. when he came to get his children. So he had like, I think he had two children. So he would ask, can I visit them? I think she had sole custody. So he would say, I'm going to visit them on Sunday. She was like, okay, cool. So she didn't see him for 36 hours. Now, he told Nancy that he stayed at a place that he had in Danvers, Mass., Saturday night because he had a few drinks and he didn't want to drive back up to their home. Like, I don't really entirely understand why he would stay with her, but I guess like they had arranged that he would stay Saturday night and then take the kids sometime on Sunday, but he never showed up. He ended up just staying in his apartment, condo,
etc. Whatever he had.
She said he seemed to be very cheerful and upbeat on Sunday. Like he had just, you know, was like smiling and friendly. She said he was like a very violent and mean man when he was drinking, but when he wasn't, he was a very sweet man. And she thought that like nothing seemed off to her. He seemed like he was in a really good mood. So Newton, New Hampshire is about 20 minutes from Eagles Club in Haverhill. And the police go to question him and like hear his story. And he said, yes, like I was drinking. I saw Arlene. We danced. I danced with some other women too. And then he told the police it was too late to go to his wife's house. So he was, quote, just out to kill the night. Kind of eerie words to be saying in a murder investigation. He said that he bought Arlene drinks for her birthday. And then he gave her a ride home. And then his story that he told the police was that a car followed him. The same men, the Puerto Rican men that he targeted for no reason,
Jesus,
were following him and her friends, and that he was mad. So she was like, his story was that he was angry that these men were following, and she was trying to like calm him down, and he was like, fine, go be with your friends, and he kicked her out of the car, pulled over, and said, get out of my car. He's like one of the least savory characters,
but also like that's still like super douchey.
So he's like, I didn't see her after that. I pulled over, let her out of my car, and I didn't see her again. So he drove home to Danvers again. It's about 20 minutes away, and then he went to work in Salem, Massachusetts, and that was when like his interaction with Arlene would have like ended. Like anything that was involved in that night was over. So he's like, I didn't have anything to do with that after that. So what was the truth? Well, his story had some inconsistencies because he told police he stayed in Danvers on Friday night, But he actually had stayed with his wife Friday night because she saw him Saturday morning before right. he left.
So she would know.
So she would know. So lie number one. He also lied about like which day he called his wife. Like he said, I called her on Saturday and he called her on Sunday. So like not a huge lie, but still an inconsistency.
Especially when you're seeing like, okay, now there's two.
Yeah. And he conveniently left out that he pulled a gun on a man.
Of course he did. Just
a minor.
It's a small detail.
Minor detail.
Oh, totally slipped my mind.
I brushed my teeth. I turned off my Roomba. I pulled a gun on someone.
You want to hear about that? Oh, okay.
So, left out of the story. And his roommate said he didn't come home to Danvers on Saturday till 6 a.m. So, let's put that timeline in perspective. The last time anyone saw Arlene was with Albert, and it would be at like 1:30, 2 a.m. And then 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. is the next time his roommate saw him. When Albert was coming into the condo, and the roommate was leaving for work.
And Amesbury's probably like 30 minutes from...
Less than 20 minutes.
Haverhill's probably like less than 20 minutes from Danvers, yeah.
Exactly. So...
Maybe 30.
So... But there's no traffic, because it's 2 a.m. Yeah, that's true.
So probably like 20 minutes.
So a month later, on August 14th, a man named Donald Reimer was found murdered in his home in Salem. He was found to have been killed by blunt force trauma to his head.
Okay.
Sounds familiar, right? Mm-hmm. And a man named Ed Bransky, who was the roommate of Albert Moore, was working with Albert on a construction project for Donald.
Okay.
Okay.
Seems sus.
If that's not suspicious enough, Donald's father owned the condo that Albert and Ed lived in.
Okay. So we're getting...
There's
a lot of coincidences here.
Take out that pen, because we're here to connect these dots, right? Albert was convicted and sentenced to life in prison for the murder of Donald Reimer. So, because he's behind bars at this point, people are starting to feel safe coming forward, right? So, Ed, his roommate, Ed Bransky, he said, this is a quote directly from the New Hampshire Department of Justice, the statement they wrote about the case. So, Ed said to them, Mr. Moore talked to him about how to beat a lie detector test and told him that he beat the lie detector test about... the woman in New Hampshire.
Oh my God.
So 2 days before he killed Reimer, Albert also told Bransky that he was going to take care of Reimer like he did that woman.
Oh my God. And that was just a couple weeks before.
Yeah, a couple weeks after Arlene's death.
Right. Yeah. The woman in New Hampshire. That was only a few weeks before.
He also told Ed that he threw her jewelry everywhere, which is consistent with how, police couldn't find any of her valuables. He said, I threw them random places so no one would find them. So it's
like
them.
A robbery, yeah.
Yeah. And a man named Paul Morse, M-O-R-S-E, not to be confused with Albert Moore, Paul Morse lived across the street from Albert and Nancy and asked him if he did it, basically. It was like, oh, you know, you're being accused of this. I'm seeing you, like, go to the police. Like, were you involved in this? And Albert told him he passed the lie detector test. But later, because he was a heavy drinker, he said when he was drunk that he's like, they'll never be able to catch me.
Loose lips, man.
Yeah.
They he sink ships.
Loose lips. And Richard Jones was in prison with Albert. He was like one of his cellmates. And apparently Albert told him about the night he had with, quote unquote, some girl in New Hampshire.
Huh.
So this is what he said to Richard about what happened that night. Which is probably what actually did.
Richard's
happen.
The cellmate, correct?
One of the cellmates.
Okay, perfect.
He must have been like not just a love fun to tell person his to stories, live. Though. Yeah, but like not a fun person to cohabitate with in jail because all of his cellmates came forward and told very detailed accounts of everything he said to them. So he told Richard that he drove her. He called her racist slurs because she was associating with.
Oh my God.
These friends that she had made at the club. He slapped her, he told her. He told Richard that he had slapped her. He said that he knew the area where he left her face down in the water so well that he could have done it in his sleep. He tried to stage it, like the reason why she was found with no clothes on was because he tried to stage it as like a sexual assault type of crime.
Oh my God.
And he thought because she was naked in the water that her body would become bloated and she would be unidentifiable. He also told Richard his story to police about letting her out of the car would be impossible to disprove. So that's why he decided to say that, like, these men were following him, and he just let her out of the car.
All right.
So what about the police? I mean, the tire tracks the police found. Did they match the van? Ah, great question. He changed the tires. So remember, he has that's like...
actually pretty smart.
Okay. Don't confuse us with Connor condoning this behavior.
I'm not condoning his behavior, but that's pretty smart.
But he had like a 4.5 hour window.
Right.
And he changed the tires.
Yeah, and it's not like he hid the body, really. Yeah. So he wouldn't need that much time.
So this menace to society is walking around a prison telling everyone what he's doing. In 1977, he was indicted for the murder of Arlene because his cellmates were telling
people. Yeah, now they had enough evidence.
But the case never went to trial. It was scheduled for the end of 1979, but since he was serving a life sentence for the murder of Donald Reamer, they were like, we're not going to go farther. Like, we're not going to try to actually send
him. It's interesting they wouldn't, because a lot of times they do, so that's interesting.
So the case is kind of like, it's going cold, essentially, because they can't close it, because they don't have him actually convicted of the crime, right?
Right.
So the Rockingham County Cold Case Unit started up in 2009. And this is also close to the time when Amy Wallace, who was Arlene's grandniece, started to try to get more traction to get the case finally closed. So she approached them in 2015 and started asking questions about Arlene's case. And they're like, we're going to reopen it and we're going to reinvestigate it. So Moore was interviewed and he denied committing the crime. And then in 2015, Moore told his cellmate, one of his other cellmates.
Oh, my God.
He doesn't learn. He doesn't learn. The man has a big ego. He told his cellmate, Wayne Healy, that Arlene, this is the most chilling part of this whole thing. He told his cellmate, Wayne, quote, Arlene wasn't the only one. She was one of many.
Is so scary.
And finally... last month, the cold case was closed because it was decided beyond a reasonable doubt that Albert Moore was responsible.
So, like, in January, it was closed?
Less than, like, it's 3 to 4 weeks ago. It was end of January.
That's amazing.
So, the sad part of this whole thing is Albert Moore passed away on November 11th, 2019, as a result of prostate cancer. So, he was 88 years old when he died. So, he never... actually was able to be like convicted of this crime. But the killed case is finally closed, which I thought was sad. Do a lot of these where it's clear who the person is and they never actually get convicted. And even though I know he's no longer alive, so so the family gave a statement to the New Hampshire Department of Justice, and they said, quote, though we can no longer prosecute, we still feel some relief in knowing what happened to Arlene that night, and more importantly, who is responsible. We take comfort in knowing that she lived her life fully, bringing joy to those she loved, end quote. And they described her as being charismatic, beautiful, polished, and had a great personality.
Is her husband still alive?
I actually don't know. It didn't say in it. It's hard to find. I couldn't find like photos of even Albert, like any mugshots or anything. I think because a lot of these documents, like the case went cold in the 70s, really.
Yeah, beginning 80s.
But this is the story of Arlene Clevesey and the horrible, disgusting human being that took her life, but that who now is, if he's not rotting in jail, he's probably rotting in hell.
It's where he should be.
He'll get his justice. We'll get justice somehow. But no, welcome back to Mass Hysteria, and we will see you guys next
week. Bye, guys.